Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, January 4th, 2017. Two people were killed in cold blood and several others injured during an attack near Torit town.
For the last 3 or 4 days up to date, the situation has not been all that pleasing because there has been exchange of fire here and there.
And South Sudanese talk about their expectations for the new year.
Enough is enough. We cause damage. Our country is suffering. Our masses are already finished. So what we want is to accept this dialogue, put our political interests aside, and move forward.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Local leaders and eyewitnesses say unidentified gunmen killed 2 people and injured 6 others during an attack on a vehicle carrying passengers along the Torit Juba Road today. The wounded are being treated at Torit Civil Hospital. An eyewitness says the gunmen stopped the vehicle some 20 kilometers to Torit town in a place called Lorele. Witnesses say before the passengers could jump out of the bus, the gunmen opened fire. Albino Ohure, the only passenger who wasn't wounded, described what happened.
So, as
when we reached the bridge, the driver saw armed men on the road. He stopped the car and was trying to turn and run back. They started shooting us. The driver opened the door and ran to the bush, and the armed men started shooting everybody. The 2 who died were pulled out of the car and shot in the head.
Ohure said all 6 passengers were injured while they were inside the car. He says when the car stopped, the armed men ordered the passengers to flee even though they were wounded. Ohure says the ones who were badly injured, including a child and a woman who was shot in both limbs, were left at the scene. He says other passengers are still at large in the bush. Hakim Paride, a peace activist in Imatong State, condemned the shooting, saying the only way this kind of violence will end is through dialogue.
For the last 3 or 4 days up to date, the situation has not been all that pleasing because there has been exchange of fire here and there. And until today, we received this sad news of today where the civilians fall into a tragic kind of happening. It is not all that pleasing. Whatever way we want to solve a problem, we actually say as peace activists, violence will not give us our rights. And it is not the best way to address our own problems. Rather, we appeal to those or both sides in that respect that the military approach will not give us a solution. We'll only experience death. Will experience a lot of these bad happenings, loss of property, denial of access of movement and here and there.
Imatong State Information Minister Josephine Akulang declined to comment. Imatong State Police Chief Inspector Major Fadir Abuna confirmed the incident took place and says police are still gathering information. Relatives of the victims have crowded into Torit Hospital to learn the conditions of their loved ones. Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit contributed to this report. Still in Torit, youth in Imatong State say the 3-year-old long conflict has prevented them finding a better job after many businesses shut down and some laid off their employees due to rampant insecurity and deteriorating economy. Many youth in Imatong State capital Torit say they are afraid 2017 will be an even more difficult year. Dimo Silva Aurelio has another story for VOA from Torit.
Dozens of youths here say they had jobs in private sector and non-profit organizations before the conflict broke out more than 3 years ago. But shop owners closed their doors when they could not make a profit, and several NGOs have left the area to a lack of funds. As a result, many youths cannot earn a living. 31-year-old Hakim Paride says there are not enough job opportunities for university graduates like himself.
Many NGOs
closing. You know, government does not have a lot of positions. They have certain positions that are fixed, and when they are already fixed, they are fixed. And so people who are supposed to employ people are the businessmen, the organizations, I mean the NGOs that are trying to render services to the people. But given the current situation, you find many have left, others have closed businesses. So you find a graduate or whoever has any document that he has, it's not easy to find a job.
Gildo Butrus, another young graduate in Torit, says he has tried in vain to find a job for the past 2 years. In the meantime, Butrus works manual labor jobs like cleaning and digging latrines.
Getting job here is based on tribal basis and other things. However much you have your qualification and others, you will not get a job unless you have your relative who is actually working. That's when you'll be connected.
In Torit, business owners of small shops and restaurants say they have had to let go of a number of employees because business is down. Rosa Wane operates a restaurant in Torit's old market. She says before violence erupted in December 2013, she employed more than 10 workers. Now she has only 6. Speaking in Arabic, Wane says many youths ask to be hired, but she has to send them away.
Work is bad, and many of them come to me explaining their situation, saying children sleep hungry. Give me some work, but I tell them, my daughter, even if I employ you now, nothing is good, and they could go back hungry. But what can I do? Things are expensive. I cannot increase their number.
Wane William manages the Atebi Medical Center in Torit. William used to employ about half a dozen clinicians and nurses, but he says he hardly makes a profit and is considering closing down the medical center altogether.
We are receiving less patients, whereby it is too difficult now for us now to operate due to the crisis of the country. We don't have enough resource whereby we can employ more youth like previous years. Like in 2012 and the rest, we have so many youth whereby we employ them in our center.
Torit resident Margaret Idua advises the youth to be creative and not to wait for advertisements for white collar jobs.
As we know that even in the government, and the positions are also very limited, given with this economical crisis, some NGOs are already shutting their activities. As a result, it is creating a gap. But my advice to our youth that let them not lose heart. You know, let them continue hoping. And most of all that, I could advise the youth, you know, everything is possible with your creativity. Do something for yourself.
Benjamin Okwahe, Director General for Public Service in Imotong State, says the state government is unable to recruit new employees due to the economic crisis.
The state government actually is having that interest of recruiting graduates. There are so many graduates who are focusing to see to it that they are employed, but there is no way out.
Idua says the ongoing economic crisis should be a wake-up call to young people that they need to take low-level jobs they have never done before until the economy improves. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
South Sudanese who fled conflict in Yei River State and sought refuge in Uganda's Bidibidi refugee camp are setting up small-scale business enterprises in the camp to supplement the help they receive from relief agencies. Refugees say the aid they receive is too little to sustain their families. They are asking non-profit organizations to provide them with loans so that they can expand their businesses. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from Juba.
South Sudanese refugees in northern Uganda's Yumbe district say the food they get from the UN World Food Program is not enough to sustain their families, so they are doing what they can to earn some money. Odama Eli Anga used it to sell second-hand clothes in Yei River State before he fled the area last year. Recently, Eli bought a sewing machine, which he hopes will enable him to sew clothes and sell them in the camp. Eli earns about 100,000 Ugandan shillings, or about $30 a day, by selling second-hand clothes in the camp. He says he used to earn over $100 a day doing the same business in Yei River State, where running his business was easier.
Every resource is there. You can buy more than two types of clothes. Business is okay. But here, only one type. Sometimes if people did not come to buy, you will continue to stay like that until when they also come and they buy. The problem here is only capital. Capital is not enough because we used this money for transport since coming from South Sudan.
Eli says he earns some money to supplement what he gets from the UN Sharer. He encourages other refugees to think of some of small enterprise they can run.
Yeah, my business helps me mostly. I can able to acquire other things from the market since the type of source given to us is only beans. I am now currently with my business. I'm able to afford, I'm able to buy sweet potatoes in the market to be boiled for taking tea. Though the capital is little, but it is helping me.
Sarah Tete was separated from her husband and she fled to Bidibidi settlement camp with her 7 children. She says she feels like a widow since she doesn't know the whereabouts of her husband. Tete was a retail trader in Yei River State, Morobo County. Now she sells vegetables in Bidibidi settlement camp. Tete says she earns around $1 a day and uses the money to help her children. Speaking in her Keliko language, Tete says the money she earns is not even enough to cater for her children's needs.
I use the money for buying sugar and small fish, and it's not enough to buy even meat because the money is little and our demands are too many.
Mary Nyoka fled Yei River State, Lanya County with her children. She lives in Bidibidi camp, but her children are in Rhino refugee settlement. Speaking in her local Pojulu language, Nyoka says she would like to get a loan to expand her business of selling cassava flour and other items such as onions and tomatoes.
You know this business? I came with little money and I'm buying the cassava flour just to help me, but the money is not enough. Like in a day, I only get 4,000 shillings.
That's about $1.5. Nyoka says she needs the extra money to buy salt and soap and will continue her business because very little bit helps. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at prospects for elections in Kenya. That story is coming up after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you rate the level of healthcare available in your community?
Though the government is trying to increase the level of the healthcare, but we still see some loopholes and some level standards whereby most people don't get exactly what they should get from the health centers and health facilities.
I think the level of health care is varying from district to district, from region to region. But I've been to worst case scenarios where even women cannot give birth in hospitals. We have a lot of doctors graduating out of medical school every year. The question is, where do they go?
So I think accessibility to health services in my village is really awesome.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Kenya's Electoral Commission says political rankles and tension related to biometric voter technology may delay preparations for the country's upcoming elections. From Nairobi, Mohammed Yusuf reports that the opposition is threatening protests over a proposed amendment to Kenya's electoral law.
Kenya's Senate Legal Committee is reviewing public comments about a controversial amendment to the electoral law the lower house passed late last month. The bill will allow manual voting and also allow the commission to manually submit election results in case biometric voter technology fails during the August election. Electoral commissioners said they requested the amendment because they do not want to lock out some voters who may not be identified by their biometric registration kits. Former Council of Governors Chairman Bomet County Governor Isaac Ruto told the Senate Legal Committee the manual system could be manipulated.
Out there, Kenyans just want fairness. They are not interested in tyranny of your numbers inside the houses. The real issue is the voters who don't turn up, and we end up voting for them manually, identifying them manually.
This is not the only Electoral Commission request that has been challenged. A Kenyan court stopped the electoral body from awarding a bid auditing firm KPMG to clean the voter register. The court also suspended $25 million tender for printing ballot papers given to a Dubai-based company, saying the bid was marred with irregularities. Electoral Commission Deputy Head Betty Nyabuta says political players are making preparations for the election difficult.
I think we are largely very prepared for this election. I really don't see any huge challenge. The huge challenge would basically be out there with the external players. They need to give us that operational space for us as a commission to do our work.
Political commentators Martin Andati wants any quick fixes to the electoral process may result in post-election violence.
If you are doing amendments haphazardly the way we are doing, we are bound to have problems during the voting time. So that will cause a problem. And if we don't have a credible and acceptable election, then we are bound to have chaos.
The electoral body plans a mass voter registration from January 16th to February 14th. The registration activities may be affected by opposition plans to start street protests if the Senate passes the electoral law amendments. The Senate is to meet Thursday to debate the amendments and vote on the recommendations from the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to Somalia, where UN humanitarian officials say drought conditions are expanding in Somalia despite rainfall in parts of the country in late November. Widespread crop failure is expected. Livestock are threatened and disease outbreaks are reported. VOA's Jordi Kapwa has the story.
Nature has not been kind to Somalia in recent years. Drought, coupled with conflict, led to the displacement of more than 1 million people within the country. Another million or so Somalis are refugees in neighboring countries and Yemen. But many people who have not been uprooted are also in need of humanitarian assistance. Justin Brady is head of office for Somalia for OCHA, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. He says following the Gu rainy season last July, a new estimate was released on the number of people in need of aid.
The assessments done by the Food Security and Nutrition Analysis Unit that is managed by the Food and Agricultural Organization put the number at just over 5 million. That's a new threshold for us to pass that we haven't seen since the end of the famine in 2012. Of those, 1.1 million are estimated to be in crisis and emergency. And again, that's a new threshold for us to pass and a very worrying one.
Of the 5 million needing assistance, he says, 4 million are in what's called the stress category.
Our main concern now is that of the 4 million or so that are in stress, that's a category where people are really on the margin and could easily fall into worse conditions, that they won't just fall into emergency, but they will skip over emergency and go straight into crisis if the conditions don't improve.
Brady says the expanding drought in Somalia is a complex problem.
The situation of drought in Somalia is multi-tiered. We've had drought conditions in the north of the country for about 5 to 6 successive seasons with on and off rains. We're now seeing those conditions spreading to the south of the country. But of course, the coping mechanisms in the different areas of the country are quite different. So it isn't simply to say there's been less rain in one area and therefore it's worse off. We need to look at the particular vulnerabilities of those populations.
And it's affecting how much people have to eat.
In the north, the crops are not necessarily the most important part of the equation. For them, it's livestock, and livestock have been devastated by the lack of pasture and water to the point where when I had a meeting with the president and vice president of Somaliland, the ministers that were there said, we need to forget about the animals. We need to start just saving people's lives. down south in the past season that ended sort of in July, we saw about 30 to 50% reduction in food production in what is the breadbasket of Somalia in the cereal region.
Brady says as people become malnourished, they are more susceptible to disease. There's been an increase in cases of measles, acute watery diarrhea, and cholera. Drought conditions in Somalia are blamed in part on the recent El Nino weather event, which warms ocean temperatures in some regions. Then there's concern over a La Nina weather event, which is a cooling of ocean temperatures. Brady says, whatever the cause, the problem's getting worse.
I'm not a meteorologist. I just see the results on the ground. This past season, the deer season, which should have been October through December, has underperformed considerably. And so we're seeing a place like Somaliland, which had made some improvements in the rainy season earlier in the year. Those gains have all evaporated very quickly, and people are really starting to fall into crisis and emergency.
Conflict has been present in Somalia for many years. African Union and Somali government forces continue to battle al-Shabaab militants. But conflict does not always occur in drought-stricken areas. However, when it does, things can get bad fast.
To date, it hasn't been significant because the drought has had the most profound effect in the north, where we don't have necessarily those profound conflicts. We do have some clan and some disputes between Somaliland and Puntland over two disputed regions of Sol and Sanaag. But as we see the drought creep south, this is going to become a major factor. And as we saw in 2011, the lack of access for humanitarian actors had a devastating effect on the vulnerable populations. And we saw a huge amount of displacement.
The drought that began in mid-2011 struck East Africa very hard. But in Somalia, the UN declared a famine in two southern regions where many thousands of people died. Conflict prevented humanitarian aid from reaching those in need. Last March, OCHA announced a drought relief plan for northern Somalia. However, only about half the funding needed to implement the plan has been received. Humanitarian agencies say the plan for this year would provide urgent life-saving aid to nearly 4 million people. It will cost $864 million to fully implement. OCHA's Justin Brady says the recent political gains in the country have not yet benefited the average Somali. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Some South Sudanese in the Ugandan capital Kampala say they hope the new year will usher a new era of peace, stability, and economic recovery in the country. Some South Sudanese say 2016 was an exceptionally grim year for the country. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Kampala.
South Sudanese in Kampala say renewed fighting, rampant insecurity, the high rate and out-of-control inflation, along with looming starvation, have made 2016 the worst year in the country's five-and-a-half-year history. John Ariath Deng is a South Sudanese lawyer based in Kampala. He says while 2016 started out with a lot of hope, it ended very badly for most South Sudanese.
People were not of that stable. No, lack of stability, lack of security were there. And also the crisis has created a lot of a problem like lack of food has taken place.
Martin Manuel is a South Sudanese journalist who has not been able to visit his parents or relatives in his hometown in the former Lakes State since the country's conflict broke out more than 3 years ago. Manuel says widespread insecurity along one of South Sudan's main roads prevented him from going.
2016 was not a good year to all South Sudanese, given circumstances happening back home, the crisis, economic crisis, political instability, and so many things.
Speaking in Arabic, South Sudanese youth Bahra Ghazal Guy says 2016 was the year many young South Sudanese saw their dreams of becoming teachers, doctors, and engineers evaporate.
Many youth were not able to complete their school year, especially those studying in universities and primary schools. Some students in the country simply never enrolled this year. This would have not happened had the conflict not erupted and the country was peaceful.
Last month, President Salva Kiir called for a national dialogue to identify and address the root causes of South Sudan's persistent conflicts and to restore peace across the country. Manuel says only peaceful negotiations can bring about an end to the country's problems.
A reasonable South Sudanese can first begin with peace. If there's any peace, stop all these political crises. That's where we can be able to stabilize the economic of the country. Cost of living is very high. The death toll is now so much, rampant everywhere in the country. So hopefully peace will be the best thing to start.
Deng says he supports the president's call for an all-inclusive national dialogue, but says it must not be run by individuals or groups associated in any way with the ongoing conflict in the country, including the ruling party and armed opposition.
We can give national dialogue to religious leaders only, those who are neutral and flexible to come and focus on those issues.
The people of South Sudan, Manuel says, have suffered so much for too long, often because of the selfish interests of a few politicians who have no regard for the welfare of their own people.
Enough is enough. We cause damage. Our country is suffering. Our masses are already finished. So what we want is to accept this dialogue, put our political interests aside, and move forward.
Guy also blames the country's leaders and politicians. He says they are responsible for fueling ethnic tensions and divisions among the people.
We hope there will be tangible changes in 2017. Here, we live together, the Nuer, Dinka, Bari and Suluk. We coexist as South Sudanese youth. We eat together. If I do not have anything to eat, the Nuer gives me. If the Nuer does not have, the Suluk offers to him something, and if the Suluk has nothing, he can always get from a Bari.
Dan says he sincerely hopes that 2017 will usher in a new era of peace, stability and tolerance in South Sudan.
I want to see my country very peaceful, a peaceful nation, a nation with stability, a nation with a security, you know, a nation with free movement, you see that. A nation which accepts each and every person. A nation which can avoid tribalism.
Deng, Guy and Manuel all say they intend to play their part to promote national healing, reconciliation and peaceful coexistence as a means to realize sustainable peace in South Sudan in 2017. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku. In Kampala.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with a new song, Anna Guide by Crazy Fox.
We have been listening to Crazy Fox with the song Anna Guide. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicle and home.
Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Shara Safari.